Welcome to Fatal Flaw. I'm Molly.
And I'm Maddie.
A couple of disclaimers before we start. There will be spoilers for Percy Jackson and the Olympians and Heroes of Olympus. There will be adult language and adult topics, so proceed with caution. Mom, please don't listen to this. Today, we are talking about the Lightning Thief musical. We have two very special guests who, unlike most people, have seen the Lightning Thief musical. Our guests today are Meg and Anna Grace.
My name is Meg. I'm a children's librarian, so I actually interact with the Percy Jackson series, like, a lot in my day job.
Wait, can I just stop and say that I forgot about that? I'm having you on my podcast about Percy Jackson, and I forgot that you were a children's librarian.
That's the coolest thing ever.
That time that someone was checking out all the Percy Jackson audiobooks, and then a book about, like, whittling crafts, and I texted you.
Because that was me, actually. Uh-huh. No, I like, you two are both my go-to musical and literature people, and I just completely forgot that you have a day job that also reflects that. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's okay. Now I have to think of something else to say, actually, so you did me a favor.
I bought you some time. Who's your godly parent?
I was always really attached to the Hermes cabin. I was always just like, yeah, the Band of Misfits. But I also, I also did really like Poseidon because I was a swimmer. Like, I would read Percy Jackson at swim meets and just be very like, yeah, water powers. I wish I could do that. So kind of an even split between the two of them. As an adult, I'd probably lean more toward Hermes because, like, as my job, I, like, you know, sit in a building and wait for, like, kids to come to me. So.
I thought you were going to say you steal things.
No! I mean, I hoard free things and disperse them. That's what librarians do.
All right, Anna Grace, your turn.
Yeah, hi, I'm Anna Grace. I am a theater arts grad student who just has to defend my thesis, and then I'm done a year late.
Yay!
Thanks, COVID. and my thesis actually was on the adaptation of specifically young adult literature for the stage. So I have a lot of feelings about this topic.
I literally don't know these things about you two. Like, I know them, but I didn't. Like, that's not why I brought you on. It's because you're my friends and you saw the Percy Jackson. I'm like, okay, you got a ticket, you're in. I'm so sorry that I didn't put two and two together that you guys are, like, kind of experts on this topic.
Sometimes nepotism pays off.
Yeah. Okay, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's okay. So, yeah, so that was my thesis, was on developing different adaptation methods for bringing novels to the stage, because there's a lot of writers do that, but a lot of them don't, like, write about their process or have sort of, like, methods that other writers can use. So that was sort of what I was exploring in my project. And I think my godly parent would be Aphrodite.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Because I love Valentine's Day. It's, like, my favorite holiday. Yeah. And I write a lot of romance, and I just love a lot.
Uh-huh. Also, like, that. I know podcasting isn't a visual medium, but Anna always has, like, outfit, like, dresses and, like, big statement earrings and the, like, adorable glasses and makeup. Like, you just, like, you walk into a room and that's, we know what cabin you'd be in.
Right, like, when they give Piper her, like, Aphrodite makeover, that's just, like, how I look as a person.
Oh my god, I love that. So, Anna Grace, I think you are way more prepared than me. I think you took more detailed notes than anybody here, and Maddie took some damn detailed notes.
I have zero notes, and all week I've been like, I need to re-listen to the cast recording before the podcast, and I knew it was an hour and 17 minutes long, and I sure waited until there was an hour and 17 minutes leading up to this podcast to press play. So I was like logging onto Skype like with the last song playing.
Does that include the bonus tracks? I gotta know.
Yes, it did.
Oh my god. So do you just have some initial thoughts that you'd like to share on the musical?
Yeah, maybe we could touch on, like, when we saw it and, like, the context in which we saw it. Because I think that this is very much a show where when you saw it probably did impact what you got. Since, as I'm sure Maddie has in her notes, it was originally developed for touring to schools. And it was hour long. And then it was lengthened into a full-length production, which ran off-Broadway and then went on a North American tour and then transferred to Broadway. So Meg and I saw it in February or March of 2019. I don't exactly remember.
It was like the last week of February.
Yeah, it was like my school break for my first year of grad school. So Meg drove to... Should I say places where we were? I guess I don't live there anymore.
You're not there anymore. No one can find us.
And we went and saw the show in Detroit.
Oh, nice.
On tour, which was most of the original cast, though it wasn't in it anymore.
George Salazar.
Yeah, George Salazar had left the cast at that point. But otherwise, I think it was full original cast or close to.
That's awesome. So what did you think? I know that's a big question, but like, did you like it? Did you have a good time? And this is like, so this is my Mamma Mia question. There's like, when I talk about Mamma Mia, there's two different levels. There's like, is it a quality piece of art that I would recommend to others who are looking for like good art? Is one question, and then the other question is like, did you have a good time? So like making the distinction between those two, like, did you like it?
It was fun. It definitely felt a little like shallow. Like I remember like for the first 2/3 or so, I was very just like head empty, having a great time, no notes. And then for the last third, I was just like, this is so long. I'm so ready to go home.
Yeah, I think that it is definitely like a very, very fun show. Like it's super high energy and like the performers are truly like going for it. Like there's you really can't fault the performances at all. I've never seen so many people not return for the second act of a show.
Oh,
do you remember that, Meg? There was so many people didn't come back.
Yeah, I also remember we were surrounded by a lot of older people, and I was like, are these people getting anything out of this?
Right. And to be fair, like I think probably a lot of those people were like, you know, like season subscribers holders. Who just like go see everything and are maybe more willing to leave. But I remember like as someone who like loves Percy Jackson, who read the books as a kid, who still hasn't read Blood of Olympus, but otherwise has read all the Heroes of Olympus books.
That's fine.
The Kane Chronicles. Like, I'm, you know, a big fan of Riordan media. And I kept having to be like, wait, what is happening? Is that in the book? I'm confused. So it's like, it's a very fun show. And like, I think that there's a reason that it has sort of gained its own little cult following, like within Percy Jackson fandom. But it's a very, very flawed show. So sometimes it's like the flaws start to hinder your having fun. So it's sort of not, you almost can't compare it on that Mamma Mia level of like, did you like it? Was it good art? Because like, I think that it's hard sometimes to compare it on that level of, was it good art? Did you like it? Because I think that there are things in this show that they do astonishingly well. And I think there are things in this show that I've never seen done more incompetently in like a professional production.
Can you like, I've never seen it. What kind of stuff are you talking about?
Meg, do you want to go first? Because I feel like this sort of brings into like more of my notes.
I was gonna say I felt like I've never felt this way about a piece of theater before, but I feel like with a lot of live theater, like if it's a little bit subpar, like it's fine if the cast is really high energy. Like Mamma Mia is like also quite shallow, but like you're just like loving it the whole time because it's so high energy, and the fact that it's live like makes it better. Like, the movie is also very fun, but I feel like, I'm so down to see Mamma Mia live. I've seen Mamma Mia live, like, 6 times, because it just, like, it goes by like that, and it's so much fun, and being there live makes it, like, such an incredible experience, and the energy of it sustains you the whole time. And the Lightning Thief musical, like, this was the first time I was watching a musical where I was like, oh, I wish I was watching a recording of this at home, and I could, like, pause it and get up and, like, leave and come back to it. And it was weird because, like, the cast is very high energy, but it just, like, oh, it just really dragged. And, like, being there live, I was just, like, I feel, like, trapped by the fact that I can't, like, be multitasking or anything. And, it's so weird because normally theater is able to, like, keep my interest for the fact that it's live and I can't, like, be on my phone. But not this one for some reason.
And I also do want to say that, like, I love, this is one of those shows, I have a few shows like this where, like, I actually like the album as almost like a concept album experience more than I like the full production. And I feel like
I agree,
because for me personally, Lightning Thief is one of those shows. I totally understand why there's people out there who like love this show with everything in them because they've only heard the concept album, or they've only listened to the cast recording rather, which functions as like a Lightning Thief concept album and has like a lot of really fun songs, a lot of like fun little in-jokes for people who are, you know, very well acquainted with the series. So I don't want to sound like I'm coming from a place of like, I don't understand why people like this, because I 100% understand why people like love this show. And like Chris McCarroll is like a fantastic Percy. Like their Annabeth characterization is so good. Like, like Percy and Grover have so much good stuff. Like there's a lot of good stuff in this show. It's just highlighted better on the album than it is in performance.
Yeah, I like listening to it, I'm always like, oh, here's like where Bianca comes up, that's so fun. And I remember being in the theater like, why are we dedicating like 3 verses to her? She's not part of the plot. No one who hasn't read the book will care about this.
Is that the part, and I've only listened to the cast recording, is that the part where they say like, my brother and I got here in 1939
in Drive, because they don't have a scene at the Lotus Casino, but they wanted to keep it in for some reason, so they just walk past it and they're like, we should go in there, and then she's like, hi, I'm like from the past, and they're like, let's not go in there, and it adds nothing to the show, which is fine. Like, things can exist in art just to be fun, but like, I don't know, like, it's much more fun listening to the CD than it was, like, being in the theater. Like, why did we spend time on that?
Yeah. I think one of the things you guys have mentioned to me before is that you think it might even be too close to the book. Do you think so?
Yes. Yes, 100%.
I would love to see in a parallel universe where the film was never made what this show would be like. And I actually am a little bit nervous for the Disney Plus Percy Jackson adaptation, because there has been such a, like, there's such a feeling in the fandom of, like, the movie is a trash fire, and it's the worst adaptation ever, which it is not. My God, did you, you guys just all forgot about all those other terrible, like, middle grade
Aragorn,
the Spiderwick Chronicles, there are so many worse book adaptation films than the Percy Jackson movie. But I understand why people have problems with the film. It has problems. But I just, like, I'm fascinated to know what this show would look like if the people who are adapting it had given themselves a little bit more freedom to, like, mess around with the plot structure a little bit more, to, like, take out sections, to, you know, maybe combine some characters or change time setting stuff.
I had a thought while I was listening to it today, just an hour and a half ago, that, like, I feel like because they leaned so heavily into, like, this is for people who are really familiar with the source material, I was like, oh, it might have been cool if they had, like, not tried to preserve the twists then, and, like, done more with Luke, where we know that Luke is going to betray Percy, and if, like, maybe they'd done, like, a parallel thing of, like, alternating between, like, the kids on the journey and, like, Luke at the camp and getting to know, like, him and the campers and why he feels the way that he does. Because he's basically, like, a cultist, right? Like, he has very honorable intentions, and he's like, oh, no one's, like, protecting these kids. So, like, I have to kind of hurt them to help them, because they're already being hurt by people who don't want to help them. I don't know. I think Luke is such an interesting character, and I think he's paralleled to Percy really interestingly. And like everyone who likes the Lightning Thief already knows that he's going to betray Percy. So like that could have been a way to be like, I don't know, I feel like there's such a stark divide between everything at the camp and then, like, when they go on the journey. Like, even in terms of the songs, like, it's so different once they leave. I don't know. And I really like the camp, so I just was always like...
I think that's really interesting, because so I just listened to this soundtrack for the first time in my entire life last night. I had never... ever experienced anything from this musical. I know I've seen it on the internet. I think I follow them on Twitter, but I never listened to it. And I was listening to it last night, and I thought they had revealed it in the middle of it. Cause, like, I've never seen the stage show, but I actually, like, wrote a note about this, because it was, like, the weirdest dream reprise. Kronos is talking to someone, and it sounded like Luke, and I was like, I can't see who he's talking to, but I was like, oh, is he talking to Luke right now? So I honestly thought that they had revealed it, and I was like, oh, that's such a cool twist, like, we already know that Luke is evil, and then, like, two songs later, Luke was revealed, and I was like, oh, I don't even really know what's going on anymore. So I think that's interesting you mentioned that, because I put a note in there about that.
So that actually segues so perfectly into, like, one of my complaints about the show is that because, like I said, it was originally adapted for touring to schools, it's done with a very small cast. I think it's 8 people, I believe. It's a really, really super small cast. So you're both correct that it is, like, Luke in that scene, but also they are kind of trying to, like, sort of obscure who it is. Since all of the cast is, like, doubling and playing multiple roles, except for Percy and Annabeth, I believe, don't play any other roles.
Annabeth does play the Minotaur.
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right.
That is the genesis of the bonus track, The Wittlest Minotaur, because it's, like, Kristen Stokes, who is petite, wearing this giant Minotaur head, and so they had, like, a running joke in the cast that she was the Wittlest Minotaur.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Side note. Yeah, but yeah, Percy and Annabeth are, like, the only two who don't have, like, major character.
Yeah, they don't have major doubling done. Which, again, like, I think the doubling is fun, and, like, and for, like, a school audience, like, where you're kind of, like, really playing it up, I think it probably works super, super well. But it is... I remember we talked about this in the car driving back to my apartment, was... they are constantly trying to do these, like, big scenes, especially at the camp. Like, there's, like, the capture the flag scene, and then there's, like, the scene at the end with, like, the Luke betrayal, and, like, there's only, like, 7 people on stage, and they're trying to, like, give it this, like, feeling of, like, scope, and it just, like, does not work. Like, I think that they, obviously it's a budgetary thing, because more bodies is more expensive, but... it just doesn't super translate that, like, majesty of the camp, and, like, everyone's there, and there's all of these campers from all of these different godly parents. Like, it just does not translate when there's only, like, 4 people on stage.
And that actually was, like, something that I had been really excited about, too, so that was kind of disappointing for me, because I went to summer camp every summer, and I went to, like, a fundamentalist Christian summer camp, so it did have the life or death experience of, like... we would do camp activities during the day, and then the camp director would yell at us about how we were all going to hell at night, and we'd be like, oh god, we're all gonna die. So Percy Jackson really had some, like, some specific things for me.
Oh my goodness.
We did, in fact, crucify the camp director's son in a representative Jesus metaphor.
You love to see it.
Oh, God.
But a thing about summer camp is how tactile it is. Like, you're always doing, like, chants and, like, claps and, like, running into each other and, like, chest bumping and stuff. And I was like, oh, like, theater is going to work so much better for that than a movie, because there's, like, choreography and, like, the sense of people being together on stage is so much more, like, physical than in a film. Mm-hmm. So I was very excited about that. And then we saw it. It was just like, oh, it's only ever, like, 3 people talking. Like, there's not really that, like, summer camp feeling of, like, everyone's, like, slapping each other on the back and, like even Capture the Flag was very flat.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, there's that campfire song, which also could have been a really cool opportunity. And I love that song.
Like, I do too. Yeah, I always go to that first.
I'm very much in the group of people who hasn't seen it live and loves it as like a concept album. And speaking of that, I also think, what's it called? I hate to bring up Harry Potter, but what's it called? What there's like a like okay. bands who do songs about, is that Wizard Rock?
Oh yeah, right. Rock.
Rock, with but a with W. a W. Yeah.
And then Doctor Who has Trock, Time Lord Rock.
Oh my God. But I would have loved the creators of this to do more like a we're a rock band who writes songs about Percy Jackson kind of thing. And that way it would be less stage musical and would be more we are writing songs about Percy Jackson for fun to play it for Percy Jackson fans and not necessarily trying to appeal to the broadest audience, you know?
Yeah, I do wish that there had been more genre variety because I think one of the major appeals of Percy Jackson and one of the reasons that kids get so into it is the like insert yourself into one of the cabins. Like I remember I did not really venture into Percy Jackson fan fiction, but I was like aware of it. And I remember the big thing was like creating OCs that were like, you know, in the cabin that you would be in. And I feel like, I don't know, it would be cool to see something with like each one represented by like a different genre, and just the vibe of like, oh, this one is this thing and this one is like this thing is like such an appeal for kids and like the specific audience.
One thing that I think the show does do so incredibly well, and I think that possibly there was like script doctoring options leaning into this more, was they have a ton of really, really cool practical effects, and the use of puppetry is really, really fun. Like the way they do riptide, amazing. Like I remember, like I gasped like the first time they do the riptide reveal. It's so good.
How do they do it?
It's literally just he has it in his hand and he like turns, and the guy who plays Chiron is like passing him the sword, but it's done in such a way that like it's like a hidden like trick of the light kind of thing.
Oh.
Like, it's entirely a practical kind of like magic illusion effect. And it's just so fun and impactful on stage. And, like, you know, the way that they do the Minotaur is really cool. The way that they do, like, Rover's legs. Like, they definitely leaned more into, like, practical effects. The infamous, like, toilet paper water powers.
Yeah.
The leaf blowers. And I think that it could have been really fun if maybe they leaned more into, you know, they do kind of have the opening song, which, like, has this framing device. And I think maybe it could have been cool if they'd, like, leaned into, like, you know, it's Mr. D is, like, being, like, here's the cautionary tale of Percy Jackson for, like, all the new initiate campers or whatever. And it's framed as a, like, and here's what you don't do or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if they'd leaned into the idea that, like, within its own narrative, like, it is telling a story, odd time jumps and the necessitation of using a lot of like practical like low budget effects would just like feel charming and fun. And also the fact that there's not like a huge crowd of people, because it's like, well, this is like five campers like putting on a show. So like
I really agree with that, and I think that like having that kind of framing device would have helped with a lot of the awkward like, we're going to devote plot time to this like Easter egg, because he could just like mention it if he's narrating a lot of things. I also like Mr. D's song is my favorite song in the show. So I'm very in favor of the idea of him like having a lot more showtime.
Dionysus like sure is the god of theater. Like it totally would like scan for him to be like, your punishment is you're putting on a play.
Like talk about a Greek chorus. Like that would have been perfect.
Yeah, and I think that, like I love theater as an adaptation for YA and middle grade books, because so many of them are written in first person, and I think, like, when adapting films out of books that are written in first person, that's always treated as an obstacle, and it's literally something that appears, like, in writing advice all the time, is, like, don't use first person, like, first person makes it hard to adapt, and that makes me so annoyed, because I think first person is a wonderful storytelling method, especially if you listen to audiobooks a lot. And, like, making a theater adaptation of a book in first person is great because people monologue all the time, and it's very normal to have a character, like, talking in asides to the audience. And Percy doesn't really do that. Like, they only really use the first person stuff, like, when he's singing, and everyone sings. So it's not really like, oh, he's the protagonist and we're in his head. And I just was kind of disappointed by the fact that he didn't, like, have more asides to the audience and more kind of, like, monologue-y parts.
I think also a big issue that gets brought up with The Lightning Thief is the fact that, like, because it's so faithful to the text, as opposed to the film where you have, you know, like, the plot wraps up, and then there's kind of the, like, oh, like, bad stuff might still happen, but, like, for now everything's okay, and we're gonna go hang out at camp. Like, the musical very literally ends on them being, like, there's gonna be a war! But, like, you don't get to know about it, you don't get to see it, because, like, the show is over. And I think when they were writing it for a school audience, that's great, because now you've said to the kids, oh, did you like this? There's four more books. Go read the books. Like, you're encouraging kids to go read them. But when you are, like, an audience who paid, you know, upwards of probably, like, $75 to, like, $150, $200, depending on when and where you saw it, like, it's very odd to see a show that's just, like, okay, like, we'll leave you on the cliffhanger. It's such a weird feeling.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. So my note for Bring On the Monsters was, interesting leaving a musical on a cliffhanger. And then I put in quotes, you'll see me again. Oops, there was a pandemic, so we won't. Because, you know, I hate to say it, but, like, I don't see the Lightning Thief musical probably coming back from this, but I do think that's such a weird plot device to have, because, like, musicals don't usually have sequels, except Mamma Mia, I guess, but
And Phantom of the Opera, but we don't talk about that.
Wait, I didn't even know that.
Oh, it's bad. Oh, it's very
it's
bad.
A novel, though, right? It's not... Did he write a second novel? I don't remember. I don't know what you're talking about. We don't have to go into this.
Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote a sequel musical to it twice, because the first time he wrote it, his cat deleted it.
What? Is that why he wrote Cats? As punishment to the cat?
No, he wrote Cats before.
No, he wrote Cats when he was in college.
Typical.
We don't have to get into it. It's probably not going to come back in a, like, national tour capacity or, you know, the way we traditionally would think about it, like, quote unquote, coming back. But, like, my sister runs a community youth theater program, and I would be shocked if they didn't do Percy Jackson within the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, high schools, middle schools, like, they're going to be churning out the Percy Jackson, like, junior edition. And the best part about that is scenes like camp, they have a ton of little kids who just want to be on stage. Mm-hmm. Or I should say a ton of parents who want their kids to be on stage. And so for things like, I mean, they double, triple, quadrupled up on the cast. Like, one person could play so many parts. You could split that up so that every single kid gets a role. And that's kind of the role of community theater. So I am so, so looking forward to that. It's kind of like, I've mentioned this, like, 3 episodes in a row, but I love Newsies.
Yeah.
it's kind of like how Newsies was developed, because these community theater programs kept being like, can we please have a licensed production of Newsies? And so they were going to do, like, off-Broadway. They weren't even going to, like, fully flesh it out. They were going to just put it together so that they could try it out and then license it.
Mm-hmm.
for community theater and high school theater and that kind of thing. And then it turned into this huge hit on Broadway, so the schools didn't get it for another, like, 6 years. But so in that way, I am kind of glad that the way that things worked out, schools and community theater programs are going to start to be able to do Percy Jackson in their, like, campy community theater, this is for fun kind of way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's absolutely, like you said, it's going to really find its feet, I think, in those audiences and serving those groups. And I mean, that's a really important thing I think often gets, like, overlooked when shows are being develop, that it's not just about like the immediate first production, but also like the lives that that production will go on to have into the future. I'm going to plug our friend, Megan, my friend Alex, wrote a really awesome article about how critics tend to be sort of unfair about family and teen musicals in terms of sort of like, instead of looking at them, you know, as pieces of art and how much they sort of succeed or fail on their own merit, looking at sort of like, oh, well, it's for this younger audience, so therefore it's inherently more like juvenile or amateur or unimportant. And it's a really great read. So I think you said you're going to tweet it or put it on your Instagram or something.
Yeah, we'll definitely have the links on Instagram and Twitter
shared. But I think that definitely like feeds back into that same thing of like, just because something doesn't necessarily do super well in its original form doesn't mean that it's like a failure of art.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that.
I'd also actually be really interested to see a high school production of it, because one of the things about the show was that it was a bunch of, like, 30-year-olds playing teenagers, which I do enjoy a lot. Like, one of my favorite things about theater is watching people play ages that they are not, but, like, not try to hide that at all. Yes. And I did, honestly, I did enjoy watching, like, 30-year-old Chris McCarroll try to act 12. It was very funny. But I would love to see the reverse of, like, normal kids playing all the teens, and then, like, you know, like, a 14-year-old in a spirit gum, like, beard playing, like, Mr. D.
Yes. Have you guys seen, there's a video of this child actor named Luca at a theater festival singing Good Kid from Percy Jackson from The Lightning Thief, and you listen to it and it hits you like, holy shit, this kid is 12. I strongly, that's also going to be something we're going to have to post on Twitter and Instagram. I strongly recommend that, because Chris McCarroll is incredible, and what he does for the part is excellent. And also, side note, this is the adaptation of Percy Jackson where Percy is played the most by. So I would just like to acknowledge that that's points in Chris McCarroll's favor. Thank you so much.
For sure.
And but no, like, when Luca sings it, he's like a literal child.
Yeah.
And you hear him saying, like, I never meant to hurt anyone. And you're like, yeah. Oh my God, give this child a fucking hug.
I remember during the show, not to put you on blast, Meg, but you, like, leaned over. There's, like, a bit where, like, Grover and Percy were, like, doing, like, a little, you know, like, fist bump, high five combo. And Meg leaned over and was like, do I ship that?
And I do.
Yeah, I will say, though, the Percy and Annabeth kiss in this show is, like,
so terrible.
It was one of the most unintentionally hilarious things I've ever seen. I remember it was like we were trying so, like, both of us were just like trying to hold it in because we wanted to laugh so bad, and we knew it was not the right moment.
When do they kiss? Like, what is the part?
They kiss after Luke, like, stabs Percy at the end of whatever that
he
song
stabs is. Him.
Yeah, he, like, stabs him, and then he's, like, wounded, and he's like, I'm sick.
It's the end of the last day of summer.
Yeah, and then, like, Annabeth comes over, and she's like, I don't exactly remember how it happens, but she calls him Seaweed Brain, and then they, like, kiss, and he goes, wise girl.
Wise
and, like,
the girl. Like, the worst voice you've ever heard.
And then, like,
he's, like, trying to sound stabbed, but also in love, and it just sounds like he's, like,
I also would like to put Mr. Rick on blast, because, like, wise girl is something that reads okay on the page, and you say it out loud, and you're like,
to be fair, it is the kind of pet name that a 12-year-old would come up with.
Very fair. But I think how weird it is.
That's my controversial opinion in throughout the entire Percy Jackson fandom, is that Seaweed Brain is a cute nickname. Wise Girl is, like, nothing. What is that?
I think only reason I like Wise Girl, I think it's a horrible nickname, but I like it because I always read it as Wise Girl, like, you know, like wise guy.
No, I like that. I think maybe if Chris McCarroll had said it like that, I would have enjoyed it more.
I should play Percy.
But I also think, in my mind, it's like smartass, but like the children's version of it. Like, oh, you're such a smart, like, you know, seaweed brain smartass, or like wise Alec. But you can't really say smartass in a children's book. So I think he was trying to be like kind of cute about it. But it does. And this is not about the show. This is about the nickname in general. Like, I don't think it works.
That was also a scene where, like, so you have Percy on the ground. He just got stabbed. I don't remember how he turned out okay. I guess just they gave him ambrosia or something. I don't even remember. It's not, whatever, it doesn't matter. He just got stabbed. He's fine. He's a demigod. But then, like
five out of five would come back again,
running out to like witness this. But again, this is like only like four other people, so awkward. Like, and they try and like stagger them because it's like a two-level set. So they have like someone who's up on the risers, and then someone who's like on the ground. And it was just wasn't it, Chief? I also think if I were in charge, if I were directing a production of Percy Jackson, The Lightning Thief, the musical, the series, I would...
Everybody on this call just saw me do a literal spit take. I sprayed water all over my computer. It's like... Okay, go ahead.
If I were directing a production of this musical, I would only have doubling where, like, you either are only doubling child characters or you are only doubling adult characters. Mm. It was very, very weird to watch Percy's mom play Selena.
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we talk...
I don't think they should do that.
Can we talk about another thing that happened with Selena? Because I have been thinking about it since yesterday, and I wanted to talk about it. So...
Is it the line about her mom stealing her boyfriend?
Yes!
Yep.
Yes, that was so weird. That was so weird.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I don't really have anything else to say about it, except it made me so uncomfortable. Like...
there is a way to interpret it where it's just that Aphrodite is so beautiful that the boys are no longer interested in Selena. But also, I also think that the side characters like Katie Gardner, Selena, Charles Beckendorf. Is Charles Beckendorf even in it, or is he just mentioned?
He just name dropped.
Okay. I feel it's exactly that. It's a name drop.
The thing that's confusing about they have all of these name drops, which again are like very fun Easter eggs if you're like a big fan of Percy Jackson, but if you are a person who's like, this is your first exposure to this piece of media, it is so hard to keep track of like what is setting something up and what, why does Talia have a song in this?
Yeah.
That could have been cut. That does not need to be there.
What song is Talia's?
The Tree on the Hill song.
Oh, yeah.
Or it could have been, like, Grover could have had a song about being upset about Percy's mom and mentioned her in that, like, right after the accident with Percy's mom. Mm. And it could have been, like, one verse to get her name drop out of the way, like, in a song about something that just happened and, like, establishing character for Grover of, like, he's really insecure with himself. He's just failed twice. And now for the rest of the show, we're going to be watching him to have an arc where he overcomes this. But it's so late in the show and just, like I don't know, there's so much lag to it.
Right, and they don't even do a particularly good job of, like, I feel like the, you know, the sort of, like, the devil's argument you would make is, like, well... like, it's to establish Luke's motivations, but they don't even tie it to Luke very strongly.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up in the Weirdest Dream reprise. Like, it's not unconnected, but it's also not directly connected enough.
Mm. Yeah.
And also, like, I feel like Talia is sort of just, like, it's... that's just an example of his primary motivation. It's not his primary motivation. Like, his primary motivation is the gods don't look out for us. They are failing us. And then that's just, like, one example of that failure, as opposed to, like, him specifically seeking, like, retribution for that.
Yeah. We definitely do want to talk more about the show itself, but do we have the emotional capacity? Do we have the bandwidth today to talk about the Tony nominations?
Oh, I don't know anything about them.
Let's talk about that.
Go.
This can be like Bardcast where you just explain it to me and I react because I've heard nothing.
Yeah, so basically, I don't want to misspeak because I don't have the data in front of me, but I'm pretty sure Lightning Thief was not nominated for any Tony Awards.
Correct.
Even though it was one of only, I believe, 4 shows that were eligible.
Oh, what?
Right. Obviously, there's plays that were also eligible. But so, basically the Tony nominating committee, because of the pandemic and because of, you know, odd circumstances, I guess just dropped their normal, like, you have to nominate X number of people in each category. So, like, literally before the noms dropped, everyone was like, oh, okay, the only 2 people who are eligible for Best Lead Actor are Chris McCarroll and Aaron Tveit for Moulin Rouge, because those were the only 2 shows eligible that had, like, a male lead. And then Chris McCarroll didn't get the nomination. They also did not get nominated for Best Original Score, and instead a play was nominated.
What?
Which just all felt like a huge slap in the face.
Damn,
that's insane.
And they still didn't get it.
And like we were saying, like, the cast album is genuinely so good. Like, a lot of our issues with the show are not with the songs, which are fantastic.
Right, and again, even if people don't, like, even if it didn't win, like, I never thought it was going to win, but the fact of being, like, even in a case where we don't really have a lot of other choices, we're not going to nominate you, is such a specific and, like, mean-spirited choice. And the article that I was talking about that our friend Alex wrote was written, like, far before this. It was written just when the first, like, reviews of the show were coming out. It wasn't in response to the Tony nominations, but you can definitely see, like, where the seeds of that were being sown, of, like, some shows are worth awarding and other shows are not, which is a problem. And it just feels so tacky. Like, it just feels like such a pointed, like, fuck you to the cast and the crew and the creatives, to be like, you're not even worthy of, like, a pity nomination in a season where no one would, like, fault you for picking, you know, 1 of 4 options.
Right.
Damn.
Maddie is, like, she's trying so hard not to laugh audibly.
I know.
But Maddie is losing it.
I think
there are so many categories that it was eligible for, technically. Or not technically as in, like, tech theater, but, like, so many that on paper it was eligible for, and it didn't get any.
I hate, this is like me when I was laughing at Jason dying. Sorry to spoil that again. But I feel so bad laughing at this situation, but that is such a level of pettiness that the Tony Awards people are bringing to, like, this environment. I just think it's hilarious. Like, I do feel for the cast and crew. Like, I think that sucks. And, like, I'm sure it's a great musical and we're in unprecedented times. I know we're tired of saying that, but it's so true. And so, like, you know, throw someone a bone, just fucking nominate them for the one thing that they were the only people that could be nominated for. But I just think that's hilarious. And award shows are problematic in and of themselves, so we don't have to get into that. I don't know. I don't know anything about the Tonys. I've never watched the Tonys. I don't know the process for nominations and all that stuff. But, yeah, I'm so sorry for laughing at them, but that is hilarious.
Well, I also, what really gets me, and I know I have not seen any of these shows. I haven't even seen, I do not support bootlegging. I mean, Best Scenic Design of a Musical, Jagged Little Pill, Moulin Rouge, and Tina, the Tina Turner musical, are the ones that got nominated for that. And I have just, with the most simple Google search, seen their scenic design. And Percy Jackson kicks their ass.
Yeah, I love the set for Percy Jackson. Yeah, when, like, we walked in, I was like, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah, and, like I'm really stunned, actually, that they didn't get more tech nominations, because, like, their use of lighting design is fantastic, their use of sound design is fantastic, like,
costume design, I'm sure, was at least interesting.
Costume design was good. I guess, though, it would depend on how much they count, like, the puppeteer rigs as costume design.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But like it's definitely competently done. Like it's not, again, in a crowded season, in a season in a like in the what year was Dear Evan Hansen? Was that 2017? That was a super, super crowded season where there was a lot of fantastic shows. So like you will often get seasons where they're like there's so many things up and it's anyone's award and things will get overlooked. But this is not a crowded season. This is the most uncrowded Tony season you could ever have. So to feel like
Understatement of the century.
we're not even gonna nominate them for tech awards. It just feels like it reminds me so much of how much I felt like SpongeBob was really, really mistreated. Whatever year that was, 2018, everything's a blur. Which it's such a fantastically done show. And especially on all its technical execution is just absolutely incredible. And it just felt like, they got kind of a like pat on the head, like, oh, good job. They got best scenic design. And I think that was it. This feels like that, but like 10 times pettier.
Yeah. Well, it just the set design specifically really gets me because the set is this like scaffolding with, and again, I've never
It's
seen it,
actually
but
quite
I
reminiscent
watch
in some ways of
YouTube
Newsies.
videos. Maybe that's why I like it.
Brechtian scaffolding.
It's this scaffolding with like Greek ruins mixed in. There's like, I don't know. Apparently, like Greek columns are like a meme now, but I still don't know. I don't get it. But there's these columns that are crumbling and they have graffiti all over them. Like that is a damn cool way to show this is an ancient Greek story readapted into modern times. That is so fucking metal. And that didn't get a nomination. And I don't know. That one really grinds my gears.
I think
And these
also,
people
oh,
are just
sorry.
so tal sorry. These people are just so talented. Like you can say what you want about like children's media and, the show itself, but like the actors, the performers, they absolutely deserved more recognition than they got. Sorry, go ahead.
I just think that also, like, there are ongoing conversations in, like, theater analysis and theater, like, criticism. I don't interact with really a lot of theater, like, performers and, like, technical, like, people who actually work in theater. I just see kind of the very far wave of, like, critics and, like, people who analyze it from afar. But, like, there are always conversations happening about, like, oh, like, theater being, like, unoriginal and like the like Disneyfication and like selling out and whatnot, and it really, really made me upset and annoyed how much The Lightning Thief was getting thrown into that category. And I was like, this is not like a Disney, like, this isn't, like Frozen the musical. It's a very different thing. And like, I personally think that making adaptations of novels that aren't like huge intellectual property, which I guess Percy Jackson like kind of is, but it's still not necessarily like on the level of any sort of like Star Wars. And I think that like making theater adaptations of young adult novels is such a like rich and unexplored thing to do still. And there's still the conversations like on the YA end of things of like movies being the only good like adaptation of something. And I am really excited about the idea of different books being adapted for the stage. And I think that like it leaves a lot of creativity to be explored. And it just really annoyed me the extent to which people were like, oh, like the Percy Jackson musical is just sort of a cash grab of something with a big audience and not like something that has the potential to inspire a lot more on stage creativity and like adaptations of media that people don't know very well yet.
I think especially because like my biggest criticism of the musical is not that it was like trying to be too broad, too general, too like pleasing everyone. It's actually the opposite. Like my biggest criticism of the musical is that this felt like it was made by people who love the book for people who love the book, and that shut out other groups of people who this might be their first exposure ever. So it's funny to see it lumped into this sort of like anyone off the street could go see this, and that's bad somehow, as if making theater that's accessible and broadly popular is a bad thing. spoiler warning, it's just the elitism. But it's like that's not even a problem that this show has. Like, this isn't a, like, oh, they really watered it down. This is a, like, if anything, you probably could have watered it down, like, another 20%, and it would have helped you.
Yeah. When they're
I also want to throw in that I have nothing against Frozen the Musical. It was just the best example I can think of.
When they're doing their little road trip montage, what song is that? Drive?
Drive.
I am from St. Louis. I love St. Louis. The St. Louis Arch is my mom. I wish they had cut that scene. Because they have this incredible, not just that scene, but the whole road trip montage, it felt very much like we cannot deviate from the books at all.
Yeah, I agree. And I love that song, but I wish it had been like a bonus song.
Right. Like, it's very much like if we cut this part, the fans are going to be mad and not. If we cut this part, will it form a more cohesive narrative?
Yeah. I also think that there's, like, this interesting, almost, like, survivorship bias in the Percy Jackson fandom, which is the staunch, you know, belief that, like, the movie is bad. Because the amount of people who have seen both the book, or who have seen the movie and read the books, in Percy Jackson fandom is so high. It's incredibly high. You will not find that in a lot of other fandoms where people tend to be like very, very loyal to one or the other. Hmm. So the fact that enough people either like were fans of the books and then saw the movie or saw the movie and then that inspired them to like read the books, I think just shows that like when people have a really strong opinion on adaptations, it means that they had to have consumed both of them. So, like, I actually don't see the Percy Jackson movie as a failure in, I think, a lot of ways that other people do, because I see it as not perhaps the best done adaptation in the world, but as something which is a good litmus test for people to know if they will like the books.
Hmm.
Because I think if you watch the movie, having either not read the books or not read the books in a while, and you like it, or you like parts of it, or you like ideas from it, you will probably like the books. Whereas if you like the musical, it's such a one-to-one that you kind of, like, have already just read it.
Hmm. Very true.
And I don't know, like, I feel like it kind of, in a way, almost, like, takes away that, like, level of, like, discovery of, like, oh, wow, now I get to, like, to read this book and find out all the things that were different. Like, I remember I had read the first Percy Jackson book, and then I hadn't, my school library didn't get any more of them. So I had sort of forgotten about the series until the film came out, which I saw and was like obsessed with. Aww. And then I went back to the series and I remember rereading The Lightning Thief and being like, oh my God, like, yeah, there's all this stuff in here that like wasn't in the movie. And I forgot about this. And it was like, in a way, the musical was like so afraid of like leaving something out and like upsetting those vocal fans who have strong opinions about adaptation. And they sort of like clung to like minor details as opposed to being like the things that people had problems with in the film were more things like they didn't like how Annabeth was characterized or they didn't like that, you know, a lot of the comedy had been erased or they didn't like that Percy had been aged up. Like it was more sort of like broad things and less like, I'm so mad that they didn't go to St. Louis.
Right. And I actually, I can't start talking about the films right now, but I think there were some things that they did that I hated at the time because I was so, so into Percy Jackson, the books, that looking back now, I'm like, oh, that was actually like a pretty clever adaptation device.
Mm-hmm.
They, like the pearls, I think were actually a pretty clever, that it, they pissed me off when I saw it. Trust me, like, I am on your side. I didn't like the pearls when I saw it. But now looking back, I'm like, they kind of do just go to one place, kill a monster, and then go to another place, and then kill a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And which works great in a book where, especially in like group reading, you can like read a chapter and be like, okay, let's discuss like this little episode that happened. And then, you know, the next day or the next week, you can come back and talk about the next little episode that happens. But in a movie, there needs to be a much broader narrative arc than just monster, monster, monster. So I was really happy with that. And then the musical, it has an entire song, and I'm glad it's a montage, but it has an entire song that's, here's a monster, we killed it. Now we move to another place. Now here's a monster, and we're killing that one. And now we're not driving to the next place, we're riding a bike to the next place. And we're on a train this time. Or maybe I'm confusing that with the bonus track.
That's a cat song. But okay, Drive in the same is boat. Kind of... Drive replaced in the same boat, I believe.
Okay. Quick question. Who the fuck was driving? Who was driving in the song Drive? Like, they were like, let's get in this car. Who is driving? They are children? They're 12?
They're on a bus. The bus.
They hitchhike at one point. Like a tractor driver from Missouri.
Oh my god.
Hey!
Never get in a tractor in Missouri, guys. Never do it. Never ends well.
I think at one point they take an Uber because I remember being like, oh, it's not in 2005 anymore. And I remember at that point being like, I wish they'd leaned so much harder into the 2005-ness of this.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down. One of the lines is, do we have enough drachmas for an Uber? And spoiler alert, they do not have enough drachmas for an Uber. So they went somewhere else.
One of my most distinct memories from reading the Percy Jackson books is Grover playing a Hilary Duff song on the pan flute, and I really hope that the TV show, like, leans into the 2005 aesthetic. I'm sure they won't. I don't know why they would, but, like, that just, like, really, that is the lens through which I reread the books constantly.
Especially because if you lean into the 2005-ness of it, like, you can really, like, you don't have to deal with the cell phone stuff as much. Like, you can just kind of have, like, a one-off of, like, we can't use cell phones, but also, like, it's 2005, so, and also we're, like
most people won't have teens.
So, like, yeah, we don't probably have personal use cell phones.
Yeah.
But instead, they're just gonna have a freaking CinemaSins ding-ding, why didn't they call someone? And all the critical
Do we want to go through and talk about some specific songs that stood out to you?
Sure.
Okay. I have the track list pulled up. And I think it would probably take 3 hours if we went through individually. So do you want to just get the biased version of me picking the ones that I want to talk about?
Sure.
I mean, we could, like, each do our top three.
Yeah, here's the thing about that, though, is the top three are all going to be Good Kid, My Grand Plan, and...
I disagree because, so I texted Molly last night and I was like, should I like sit down and listen to this whole thing? And she was like, yes, you should. But if you don't, listen to these three songs. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to listen to the whole thing. And I got to those songs and I literally, there was not a thought in my brain about them. They were off of my radar. I did not enjoy them very much. And I just, So no, those would not be my top songs. Molly, okay. Thank you.
Those are not my top three.
Yeah, I don't like these assumptions.
I am just self-centered. I think that everybody agrees with me. Okay, yeah, sure, we can do that.
Molly's gonna cut all of this so she doesn't look bad.
Maddie is very familiar with my tactics. I look bad, and then I cut it, and then I keep the part where Maddie makes fun of me.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Well, I'm going to need like 30 seconds because I clearly have my top two, but I need my top
I need one. To figure out which ones are my favorites.
I could go. I know which ones are my favorites.
She's like, all right, on it.
Hit me, Anna Grace.
Okay. So my top three are... the prologue, Day I Got Expelled. I love that song. I think it does such a great job of opening the show. And I actually wish that more of the show leaned into that kind of, like we're telling you a story, like, with Percy, like, directly talking to the audience. And I love that they kind of lean into the teen angst, like, tongue-in-cheek of it. Like, I think it's so fun. And then probably my My next one is Lost. I love Lost. The way that they staged Lost is kind of odd because, like, so they have that line about blowing up a bus. That's, like, very literally, like, the opening of Act Two, but, like, not, like, oh, you see them get on the bus and then stuff happens and the bus explodes. Like, the bus, like, the opening image of Act Two is the bus actively exploding, which is such an odd choice.
Holy shit!
And again, I think, yeah, like you come back from intermission, you know, you just went and had like a $10 drink, and you come back and you sit down and the house lights go down, and like the first thing you are brought into is a bus exploding. It's just a lot. It's just a lot.
Yeah, it'll pull you in though.
I do love My Grand Plan, but I kind of also think I'm gonna say. Oh, I kind of want to say DOA because I think that song also. I like the campy songs. Like I like stuff that's like very like silly and fun, and I like that that's like a disco number and kind of brings like a different feel to the rest of the show because most of it is, you know, very like, you know, pop musical. Oh, but I also forgot. Oh, Another Terrible Day. Okay, I think Another Terrible Day beats out. What does that beat out? Oh.
DOA?
I'm just gonna have four.
Anna, okay. When you said DOA, that was one of mine, and I was like, oh damn, I need a different one. And I was like, oh, okay. Another Terrible Day, and now you've gone to
No!
I'm sorry, I'm being really selfish. Okay, yeah, no, okay. I think the opening, the prologue, Another Terrible Day, and then DOA, and I'll cut Lost.
Ooh.
Even though I already talked about it. But I won't elaborate on Another Terrible Day so Meg can talk about it.
I love Another Terrible Day because it reminds me so much of the training montage song from the Disney movie Hercules, which was my absolute favorite movie growing up. And it just has such a different tone from all of the songs that we've just heard because, like, leading up to it, it's all been kind of, like punk rock vibey, and then Another Terrible Day is just very, like, I love the moment in, like, almost every modern musical where they're doing kind of rock vibes, and then someone's like, now it's time for the showbiz number. Like, that happens in Mean Girls as well, and every time it happens, I just am the happiest person alive.
It's so funny that you say that, because one of my notes for this episode is Another Terrible Day sounds so much like Turn It Off from Book of Mormon.
Yeah, which is my favorite song in Book of Mormon.
Well, there you go. So much so that when I have Another Terrible Day stuck in my head, I almost always inevitably start getting Turn It Off stuck in my head because I just cross over during one of the lines and I don't realize it.
I also just have such a soft spot in middle grade fiction for the like tired adult presence, and it's something that has only grown as I've gotten older and become a child services librarian and a teen services librarian. Like anytime that character shows up, like there's one of those characters in Artemis Fowl as well, and I'm just like, you get me. Also, just as I've said, I have a really big soft spot for things that take place at summer camps, and that's like the most kind of summer camp vibey. My next favorite song is Put You in Your Place. One, because I had like the biggest crush on Clarice when I was a kid reading the books. And also because it hits the thing that I was saying earlier about how I wish that like the different cabins had their own little like genres of song. And like, of course, the Aries cabin is going to be like the rock metal cabin. So yes. When that song opens with the like guitar riff, I just was like, yes, this is everything.
Yes, and, yeah. I also shout out to, oh my gosh, what's their name? Sarah Beth Pfeiffer. I Googled pictures because I had to like picture it in my mind. I Googled pictures of the cast. When Sarah Beth Pfeiffer's picture comes up, I was like, holy shit, that's Talia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you are attracted to women, please do yourself the favor of Googling Sarah Beth Pfeiffer. That's with a P, PF. Holy, that's Talia. Oh my god.
Yeah, she's so beautiful. And she's just very.
The vibes for Talia are perfect.
I love the sideways cap that she's got going on.
Maddie has just Googled.
I did. I know I'm not a woman who is attracted to women, but I still Googled her.
Thank you.
I'm going to make a little a quick note on DOA, just to say that, like, one, I love the genre flip of it being disco, and two, I, like, screamed at the joke with the boys' choir that, like, made my entire experience. And I wish that they'd done more things like that with, like, experimenting into different musical styles. And I've been thinking that the entire show. And then in this song, they're like, and now there's a little interlude where a boys' choir is singing. And I was like, this is for me. And he looked into my eyes and said, Megan, this is for you.
Yeah, the way they do that scene is great. Because, like, they have that, like, Percy, Grover, and Annabeth have the puppets. And they turn around and they put the puppets up. I don't know why I'm showing this as a podcast.
No, I need to know. Like, I need to know.
Yeah. So then they're manipulating the puppets while they sing, like, backwards.
Oh, my God.
It's really cute. It's really well done.
I also had no clue that that was done with puppets.
Yeah, it's like little hand puppets.
I love that.
That's funny.
The Mr. Rogers of it all.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like the show got a lot of criticism for sort of being, like, amateurish, and I, like, most of my favorite parts were when they were just like, yep, like, it's four people with a leaf blower.
My real third favorite song is the campfire song. As I've been saying, I love the summer camp vibe of it, and I just feel like it's such a real thing for middle schoolers where, like, you're all kind of complaining about something and then somebody says something that's, like, way too real and everyone's just like, anyway. And then he's just like, and I hate my dad. And they're all like, yeah. And I, like, just any song that has, like, a harmonica in it, I'm like, oh, hell yes. We're here.
I love that song. Maddie.
Oh, okay.
What's your top
three? So, my top three are going to be Another Terrible Day, Super Great. I wrote in my notes, Mr. D just stole the show, oops. Absolutely hilarious song, 10 out of 10. It's so good. I wish I would have, like, seen him singing it, because I'm sure it was just phenomenal how they did that.
They have a video on YouTube of, it's like a rehearsal or a preview. They do have a video of somebody performing.
Okay,
that.
I'll have to look that one up.
Maybe I'll send
that.
That's
fun. And then I really liked Lost, very similar to Anna Grace. One thing I really loved about it is Grover talking to the squirrel like it was an Emperor's New Groove. I thought that was the funniest thing. And the line, lost in the world and the world is terrible. I was like, so relatable. Like, I was lost with them. It was just great. And then, I really liked The Last Day of Summer. I thought it was a really interesting thing. And Molly's probably going to get mad at me, but I liked it more than Good Kid, because it had, like, the good kid foil in it, because Luke, like, says something about, like, I'm just trying to be a good kid, I'm trying to save the world or whatever, and I was like, oh my god, this is so great. I was like,
yeah,
yes.
I love that
so I thought that song, and I hate foil. Luke is like, I don't think he has any redeemable qualities, I think he's a terrible person, and I will not argue with you on this one, because I just
And yeah.
My feelings are known on this topic. He is just horrible. But I liked this song, and I thought this song was a better reveal, like, villain speech than his entire monologue that he had in the five books of the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series. Because every time Luke comes up, whenever I'm reading the Percy Jackson books, I, like, kind of skip it a little bit, because I can't stand reading anything that this white
I'm
man
so
has
sorry,
to
but
say.
We're going to have a sword fight in a parking lot about this.
I'm ready.
Meet me in the Denny's.
He's not worth fixing, girl. You just need to move on. That's me to Annabeth, anyway.
As a teen librarian, there are no bad teens.
Except for Luke.
That's not true. I have to ban teens all the time.
Didn't a teen call you a bitch one time?
Oh, but that was funny.
Way ever. It was the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, that teen received no consequences. That was hysterical. Wait. I was explaining how to sign up for programs, and his brother kept like saying things to him, and he turned to his brother and he was like, Aiden and I are trying to listen to this bitch.
That was a detour. Oh my
yeah,
god.
Yeah, no, that was hysterical. I was like, you're valid.
Maddie, was that your number
three? Yeah, that was three.
I lost track. Okay. So is it my turn?
No. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, Molly, it's your turn.
Maddie is so
I'm not even mean. Okay, let's go on.
So, anybody who knows anything about my music taste, you know I'm basic as fuck. So my top three are Good Kid, My Grand Plan, and The Prologue.
The Prologue is so good.
I know. I had not heard very much about the Lightning Thief musical. I had heard it was kind of, you know, it was kind of campy. It was, like, it was fun, is kind of the only good, like, the best compliment that it had received, at least from the people that I had heard from. And so I turn on the prologue, and the line comes up where the gods are real, and they have kids, and those kids have issues. I was like, I love this. Instantly, I was totally drawn in. I was like, yeah, they got the tone down perfectly. I mean, that's exactly what the Camp Half-Blood kind of vibes are. Like, yeah, this is fucked up. LOL. You know?
I feel like, too, the prologue is the only time when the show, like, really, like, is aware that it needs to explain things to you.
Yeah.
And yeah. I wish that they had maybe kept up that tone a little more for the rest of the show. But they do a great job of it in the prologue. Of like, it doesn't feel like they're talking down to you. Like, it doesn't feel like, you know, they think that you're stupid or that you have to have things like, you know, paint by numbers for you. But just kind of takes your hand and is like, okay, here's what's going on.
Yeah. I love that. And so Good Kid is just like, it was one of my top five. I think it was one of my top 10 in my 2020 Wrapped, because I will just listen to it on repeat. I never had a like rock or pop punk phase in like middle school. I never had a Paramore phase. I'm so sorry, because I know everybody did, but I never had that. And so I'm kind of going through a little bit of a revival in my early 20s that I'm like finally listening to the like 2000s, 2010 rock that I probably should have the first time around. And this is exactly that genre. It's like very like kind of like All American Rejects vibes.
I am
not an expert in that genre at all, but like when I listen to that song, it gives me the same vibes and energy as like All American Rejects, like maybe even like Fall Out Boy a little bit. And so I've like, it hit at the right time where I'm in my delayed punk phase and my Percy Jackson phase. And so I just listened to it on repeat. I love it so much. And it's also the first time I realized, holy shit, I read the books. I read it as a kid, and I read them multiple times as an adult. And I never got that Percy literally just got there. Like, he was there for maybe a few weeks when then he gets kicked out. Well, in his mind, he's getting kicked out and sent on another quest. Like, he just found home. And you know Maslow's hierarchy of needs? Like, he just moved one step up. He was on the bottom rung the entire time, like, his entire life. And then he finally moved one single step up, and they're like, you're going to go on a quest where there are monsters and you will possibly die. That the musical was the first time I ever like put that together in my mind. He's a child.
There's something that I really love about like hearing Chris McCarroll sing that song specifically. I'm really excited to listen to the Luca version, because I think it'll like unlock new emotions hearing an actual 12-year-old sing it, but, like, actually hearing an adult sing it portraying a 12-year-old has, like, a very special feeling to it of, like, when you're an adult, you look back at the way that you were treated as a child, and you realize that you deserved better in a way that, like, you can't really conceptualize as a kid when you're experiencing it. And, I don't know, it really made me, like, feel things that I hadn't felt when I was reading the series, where it was just kind of like, yeah, like, he's a kid, he's going on an adventure, he doesn't really like his dad, because, like, of course not. But then, like, hearing, like, adult Chris McCarroll singing as 12-year-old Percy being like, I don't just dislike my dad, but I specifically, like, was failed in these ways, and I can list them right now. Mm. Like, I don't know, it just has a very powerful feeling to it.
Yes, I love that. I'm literally doing, like, a little dance as you were saying that. Because I was like, holy shit, yeah, that's it. That's it.
I would love to introduce a topic, if I'm allowed to, as a guest.
Of course.
Yes. Can I finish my
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were on your list. My bad.
Oh, yeah. No. Just prologue, good kid, and, okay, my grand plan... I have not seen the show. I don't know how it fits in, because in my mind, it's kind of its own separate thing. I would love for, in my alternate universe where this soundtrack is just like a concept album or like a rock band that makes music about Percy Jackson, this would be my favorite, because it is so Annabeth. Oh my God. It is the most beautiful and most all-encompassing characterization of Annabeth that I've seen in any iteration, and I just I love it so much, because that's, like, honestly, it's the first 5 books, her, like, a little bit of her arc from the entire series, and they've kind of put it into that with her hubris and her need for family and her battle strategy, her Athena-ness, the Athena of it all. I love that. I don't know how it would work in the stage show. Do you guys remember that at all?
It seems like I just remember feeling like it had been kind of, like, weirdly placed chronologically.
Mm.
Yeah, it is kind of odd. In the staging of the show, Percy is, like, the only person she's singing to, I believe. In my recollection, I saw the show 2 years ago. So it's her telling him specifically, which, yeah, I think is really powerful. I'm trying to remember. Sorry, let me just look at a track listing really quick. I kind of wish maybe my grand plan was switched with Killer Quest, or I don't know. I kind of wish it happened before they left. Like, I kind of wish it was her being like, here's why I have to go on this quest with you, as opposed to, like, she's already on the quest with him and then it's like, let me explain why I needed to be here. Like, it does feel like a little bit out of order, even though I understand, you know, you can make the argument that, like, Annabeth is more reserved, so, like, it makes sense that her I Want song would be, like, quite a bit later.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I feel like there could have been something. I wonder if the song had been moved around.
Yeah, I also
really could kind of go anywhere.
Yeah, I also, again, not as a musical, but as a concept album. Try. Oh my God, I have not listened to it a lot, but I listened to it just this morning when I was getting ready for this. The way that it was written is, like, is just beautiful. I love that, especially at the end, there's each one of them gets their own little line about, I will try to do this for this reason. And it turns out it's not their reason, it's for their friend. Like, Percibeth. Oh my God. I literally was trying to say the word Percy and I said Percibeth. Like, Percy says, I will try so that you'll be remembered. And it's not for him. It's for the team. I don't know if it's the communist in me or what, but you're a team.
I like haven't really listened to the bonus tracks. I'd have to go back. And
oh, they're so good.
They're fun.
Yeah.
I would like love to know what your like dream like you know Lightning Thief or even just like you know a Percy Jackson or broader like the you know Olympian series song would be like you know you really want like Hermes to have a Western ballad or something.
Oh.
Or like a moment from a book that you would love to like be a song.
Oh, everybody else is gonna have to go first.
Oh, I can go.
I know Meg has one ready.
So growing up, I'm a middle child. I had an older sister. I was also like a weird comic book fan who had a lot of personal angst. So I glommed onto Nico D'Angelo like so excessively much. He was my favorite. When I found out that he was going to come out in the next book series, I literally like sobbed. I was so excited. So my like dream moment would be something where he's having like an angsty punk rock song about how alone he is, but it's like being backed by like an undead army. So like a big musical number where he's by himself but also has like a chorus that's at a reserve.
I love that. Oh my god, can you write the sequel?
Oh, for sure. Broadway, call me.
Anna Race, did you have one?
I would love, I guess this is sort of, it's pretty early for it to be in The Lightning Thief, but I would love like a Selena like spy song, like a James Bond, Skyfall, you know, Die Another Day, like moody, kind of like Someone Gets Hurt from Mean Girls, like kind of that vibe of like, this is her evanescence Bond song moment of her like doing some spy stuff. I think would be really really fun.
Yes,
but preferably again in a version where like Percy's mom does not double as Selena, because I found that really weird.
Yeah. Maddie, do you have any?
I recently read the book Circe by Madeline Miller, recommended by the Seaweed Brain podcast people. And it was phenomenal, 10 out of 10, definitely everyone should read it, but Richard Riordan did Circe dirty, for real.
Richard!
So, damn Richard needs to apologize for his sins, and there needs to be a Circe musical number in the Sea of Monsters adaptation.
You guys know that I'm a slut for Persebeth. I desperately want a Persebeth song, and that it they have it, like they have the bonding in this one, but I would love like a battle song for them where they're duetting but they're also fighting monsters at the same time, and they're like finishing each other's sentences, and they're, because that's very much what they're like in the books, especially The Last Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
They are totally on the same wavelength. They've been fighting battles together and going on quests together since they were 12. They absolutely understand each other without speaking. And I would love to see the words in the duet would be really great, but I would love to see the choreography for that.
I love anything where you're mixing different musical styles. So it would be so cool if like Percy had a distinct kind of way of singing and Annabeth had one that was very different, and then they like blend the two, and by the end it's kind of like overlapping seamlessly. Like my favorite romantic duet in Newsies is Don't Come a Knocking, because it's like the two different genres on top of one another. And then Something to Believe In, I was just like, hate this. There's nothing exciting about this. So I think like it would be really fun if it was like a battle song where they're each singing in a different sort of tone on the like opposite side of the stage, fighting their monsters, and then they're like getting closer together and their musical styles are like sort of seamlessly integrating.
Yes. I don't know if you understand how desperately I need the visual of Annabeth and Percy fighting back to back.
Yeah.
And if they were singing a duet at that time too,
it's very,
I'm like fanning myself.
odd. This conversation, this is not necessarily like a song I want, but just this whole conversation made me think, how bizarre is it that there are sirens in the Percy Jackson series and they didn't use them in the musical? Why isn't there a scene where they have to battle sirens who literally sing? Like, why is that?
Because they had to be true to the book, and they're not in the first book.
Exactly.
Right.
That's what I meant about, like, they really shoot themselves in the foot with this, like, we've got to be so stringent mindset. And, I mean, that was, like, basically, like, the conclusion of when I wrote my thesis was, like, you cannot make an adaptation without changing things. Like, it just, I mean, you can, but it doesn't work. And obviously they did change some things. I don't want to be like, they didn't change anything. But you have to, you know, be able to recognize that tension that you're going to encounter when you translate something to stage. And if you are not willing to sometimes maybe be a little more creative or non-literal about the elements that you incorporate, like, you're going to have problems.
Yeah.
And for all the fun stuff in this musical, like, you kind of can't escape some of those structural problems, which is just a little sad.
Maybe if they had sirens, they would have been nominated for a Tony. Okay, anyway.
Does anybody have any other last thoughts?
Would you guys like to tell people where to find you? You don't have to, but if you want people to find you on the internet.
Follow me on social media.
Okay, let me try that one again. Would you guys like to plug your pluggables, give your handles and whatnot to find you on the internet?
Personally, I'm not going to because most of mine are, blocked.
Valid.
I don't know, what have people been given? I feel like I don't have any of the good pluggable socials. I haven't written any Percy Jackson fics, but
but you've written Mean Girls fic, and there's a lot of overlap.
What?
Very true. I mean, we don't have to expose you if you don't want to.
No, I mean,
but when I read your fake dating Mean Girls AU, I recommended it to every person I know.
It's incredible.
You didn't recommend it to me.
Yeah, it's like my favorite piece.
You know
of
me and you didn't recommend it to me.
I don't think we were very close at that point.
You should definitely read it. Yeah, okay, then I guess I'll plug my archive handle, which is Phone Call from God. Which is not a Percy Jackson reference, but really sounds like it could be. So there you go.
Is that a Dead Poets Society thing?
It is indeed.
Like... there
also,
it is.
Also, there's a really fantastic Percy Jackson Social Network crossover fic that's in my bookmark. So if you want to go on a little scavenger hunt and find that, I cannot recommend that enough.
All right.
It was a delight.
It's
really
good.
It's very good.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to Fatal Flaw. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Fatal Flaw PJO. Music by David Thal from the band Glass Bandit. You can find them on social media at Glass Bandit Music.